and Spider, Episode 8, Pieces.
Chuck, here we are, Episode 8 of Bat and Spider.
Whew, my gosh. Excited to be here. Number 8. We're almost up to 10 episodes. And what a show it is. Pieces from 1982. Maybe, I don't know, is this considered like slasher canon? I feel like it's one I've always heard about, but never seen.
I think it is a definite cult following and drive-in favorite. Mm. That much I do know. It is also, for our friends over in the UK.
What is it?
Video Nasty.
My God.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
That's what it is. It is from the 1959 Obscene Publications Act. It classifies this a...
Uh-oh, video nasty.
Oh my God, thank you, Dirk.
It's our friend Dirk Feelgood, folks.
God.
Thank you, Dirk.
Thank you, Dirk.
Yeah, Pieces, Chuck. That's what we're going to be doing at the bottom of the show. Mm-hmm. I mean, what's going on? Did you watch anything? Did you do anything?
Let's see. I watched almost a horror movie. I watched a movie called The Honeymoon Killers. Have you ever heard of this?
No. Sounds like a horror movie.
I think Martin Scorsese was signed up to direct it, but he got fired. And the guy who fired him ended up directing it. I think he was also the writer. And it's the only movie he's ever directed. And it stars, this Italian actor, Tony Lo Bianca. I think he was sort of famous in the 70s, but he plays like this Spanish kind of like, he's like a grifter. He it's like before like dating apps, this was like, it was like you mail in letters and like do like classified ads. So he was like this sexy, like a sexy guy with an accent. He would get these white women, single women, and like take, you know, marry them and then get like $4,000 and then run off. That was like his whole deal. But one of the women is this overweight nurse who like they really kind of fall in love, and she starts like helping him like she's, it's super complicated because she like starts helping him do the grift. She like is playing his sister and stuff, and it's a pretty uncomfortable but amazing movie, and I think it's based on a true story. I keep meaning to research it to see what the actual events were. Yeah, it's an interesting watch. I mean, it's not like super great, but it's right up my alley. I love stuff like that. It's a very interesting watch, and it's like, it's so much about it, you know, having like, you know, an overweight female and as the lead role basically is like super strange to see, especially from like a movie from that, you know, that 1970. But yeah, it's a weird one. And I think it's on, where did I watch it? I think HBO Max and the Criterion Channel have it. So yeah, check it out. It's a weird one. How about you? Did you watch anything?
HBO Max, Chuck. I mean, can't you just look into HBO Max's eyes?
Ended up watching Big Top Pee Wee because I went through the whole list, actually.
Oh, wow.
I hadn't seen that since a videotape at my neighbor's house as a kid or something. That was great, actually. That one blew me away. It was way better than I remember.
I remember it being good, but I also, man, I haven't watched it nearly as many times as Pee Wee's Big Adventure, that's for sure.
Yeah, no way. Huh. Yeah. I mean, it's tough because you got Tim Burton's first movie, Pee Wee's Big Adventure. It's tough to follow, but...
Right.
But it's still worth watching. There's a lot of good
Pee-wee
stuff.
Pee-wee did it. Pee-wee, you trust him, Pee-wee.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I watched on HBO Max, I watched Ready or Not, which was it's a pretty fun movie. It's about, this girl marries into this La Dumas gaming family. They're like... Uh-huh. They got their fortune, it's old money, on like playing cards and, you know, backgammon and stuff, and they branched out, and every time a member of the family gets married, they have like this ceremony at midnight of the wedding night, and they have to pull a card, and whatever's on that card is the game they have to play.
Whoa.
And most times it's backgammon or old maid, or it's legit just a card game. But every once in a while, it's a game of hide and seek. And it's basically, if that card gets pulled, the family basically gives the marrying spouse that's marrying into the family, they give them like 100 seconds to go hide in the house. And then the rest of the family goes to hunt to kill the spouse.
Oh my God.
Yeah, it's wild. And
wow.
It's a fun movie, and the family is, they do this because all their belief system is based on an old pact that their great grandfather made with somebody, and they're always living in fear that basically if they don't follow through with this pact, they're all going to die in some horrible way. And you know, I'm not going to spoil it for anybody, but it's a clever movie. It went a little deeper into the gore and the horror aspect I really liked, and it was, I mean, I think cool. It's worth a watch. Yeah.
Yeah, that came out last fall, and I completely missed it. I think I was busy with stuff in my life, but hearing you talk about this, I'm like, oh, yeah. I gotta see this. This sounds right up my alley. I got some mail recently. I'll do a little mailbag thing. So I got Web of Horror issue 3. I won it off eBay, and it's like I've been collecting old comic horror magazines from the 60s and 70s. And this Web of Horror was published by Major Magazines. This came out in 1969, and it's the last issue. They only made it 3 issues, but it's kind of a who's who, because every issue had Bernie Wrightson, Mike Kaluta, and some other great artists that would go on to be, you know, Bernie's like basically a household name, at least in comics. But this was some of his first work.
Wow.
In these comics. They're really cool. And they have great ads. And yeah. And I also got a friend of the show, Rodman Flender. I was chatting with him, and he sent me the most recent thing, Idle Hands, a new special edition. It's a movie he directed.
Oh, yeah.
Scream Factory just put this out, and I think they interviewed him for it. So they sent him some, and he forwarded one on to us.
Wow.
And I think this is... might be his first movie he directed, called The Unborn, starring Brooke Adams. It's he worked for Roger Corman. This is a Roger Corman production.
Unborn sounds super familiar.
Yeah, I'm excited. It came out in 91. It even has Lisa Kudrow and Kathy Griffin in small roles. That's cool. Looking forward to that. Thanks for sending those.
So this week we decided, based on last week's viewing of Video Violence, a patron of the VHS Village there rents out a movie called Pieces, and
Hey, you got the one with the chainsaw? I think that was the line, paraphrasing. Right. What's the one with the chainsaw?
And what we have here is a cult favorite, drive-in movie favorite.
Watch out. It's a Video Nasty.
UK Video Nasty favorite, Pieces, in Spanish, Mi Gritos Tiene La Noche, or The Night Has a Thousand Screams.
Oh, beautiful. Beautiful, Dale. I can tell you practiced that in the mirror.
I did.
Before he came out of that. I don't know if there's a bathroom in that door behind you, but imagine there's a mirror in there.
I got to pee somewhere, don't I? Are we going to Spain, Chuck?
Yeah, we're going to Boston by way of Valencia, Spain.
Yeah, that's right. So, Pieces. Chuck, talk to us.
All right, Pieces. So, the basic premise of this guy is there are murders happening on a college campus. And most of them have to do with chainsaws cutting up women. And it seems like every murder, there's a body part missing, and there's detectives involved, there's the dean of the college involved, there's a nerdy students involved, there's a sexy tennis instructor involved, who's also a cop, who's a former tennis champion, apparently. And all this mixes in to get Pieces, a pretty bloody, fun slasher. That is almost, it's almost a giallo. Wouldn't you say? I got heavy giallo vibes from this. It's sort of like I feel like it might be like an in-between, a giallo and a slasher, kind of a missing link, maybe.
It has a lot of those vibes. And then it just has the gratuitous violence that you wouldn't see in the giallo film, but it has all those other beats to it, like the pacing and the close-ups of people's faces and sound, like
sound it's got effects, the killer with the black gloves, the black hat, the black trench coat. Mm-hmm. It's got that whole thing. It's got ADR dialogue. They did not record sound on set, so it's got that very 60s Italian feel of all the voiceover was done afterwards,
I watched this on Shudder. Chuck, did you watch this on Shudder?
I did. I was going to ask if you had another experience.
Well, I watched it on Shudder, and then I realized, I believe through Anna Gould's Letterboxd, that they watched it on Shudder, but they watched the Joe Bob Briggs version. And in the first 24-hour marathon that Joe Bob did, Pieces was the last film in that marathon, and it's still there. So right after I got done watching it, I went and found the Joe Bob version just so I could hear his input on the flick and stuff like that. And he did address the sound, and it was a melange of American actors, Spanish actors, Italian actors. So they were all basically talking to each other in whatever accents or whatever languages they had. And then they just went back and did like ADR. They ADR'd the whole movie for whatever market. So the movie opens on a gorgeous little boy, just heavenly with his little pleated, folded, iron shorts. And he's putting together a puzzle, and he's singing Humpty Dumpty. And
this is 1942?
This is in 1942, correct. And his mom walks in, and, she just gazes over her little boy, having playing by himself, such a great time.
My beautiful boy.
Yeah. And the mom looks over the boy's shoulder, and he is putting together a jigsaw puzzle of a nude woman.
Oh my God.
So here we go. Problems already.
I mean, this is like, even in the 90s when I was growing up, that would have set my mom off. I can't imagine 1942 having my hands on a nudie puzzle.
Mm-hmm.
Puzzles are for children, Dale.
Where do you buy a nudie puzzle in 1942?
I don't know.
Where do you buy a nudie puzzle in 1942?
I don't know.
Bloody
I feel
Nora.
Like...
It's a right proper video nasty.
I agree, Dirk.
Does she blame her... was it in her husband's stuff? Because she goes on a tear looking for other smut in like the trunk and and stuff.
She is ripping it apart. And honestly...
She's livid.
10-year-old boy happens to find a jigsaw puzzle, right? A 10-year-old boy probably doesn't even realize, like, nude woman, this is where my mind is going to go. You're 10. Your mind's not there.
He wasn't even looking at the puzzle with, like, lurid eyes. Like, he had no idea what was going on here.
Right. But according to mom, that piece of trash dad that he has, her husband, this is so like him. And, go get him a plastic bag, because she's going to get all of it and she's going to burn it.
Yeah.
Which I'm not going to keep inserting little Joe Bob things that I remember, but in 1942, there was no such thing as plastic bags.
That is something I think about all the time, Dale, is when plastic bags came about.
Really?
And usually it's when I'm taking like a particularly disgusting load of the kitchen trash out, thinking, God, when did the luxury of a plastic bag come to be? Like, what did people use before that? Like, was it just sitting in an open can? Like, was it a paper bag?
Like, was it just like soaking through a paper bag?
What did you do in
1942 paper bag when, most of the quality building materials were going to wartime production?
Yeah.
What did civilian paper bags even look like in 1942?
I have no idea. We'll have to look at, I bet you can go to an antique mall and find some antique garbage bags.
Maybe you folks should take a listen to our Tales from the Crypt special mini-sodes that you may have realized we have out at this point. We tend to do a little feature on 1942 civilian home goods. No, we don't. Just kidding. Listen to our show.
Yeah, Crypt Keeper's Coffin on this very feed. But yeah, so mom porn shames her poor kid so hard.
Yeah.
That kid must have broken in that minute. Like, whatever that convergence of sexual shame, the puzzle, his mom being angry, just it made him go get an axe, Dale. Little kid. Who knows where he goes, leaves the room, comes back with an axe.
Yeah, and she is just, I mean, she is still livid. She's freaking out. She breaks the mirror. She is beside herself,
yeah.
Not even thinking about, not even have time to react to what the boy does next.
Mm-hmm.
And that's take axe to head. Right? I mean.
Yeah. Yeah. No,
several times in the same spot.
It is, yeah. And yeah, he goes to town on mom. It's bad. It's really bad. It's bloody too. Does he get another saw and he starts cutting her up, right? Does that happen? Oh my God.
Well, he dispatches her with the axe and then, yeah.
And there's blood all over this room. Like, it's on the walls. It's all over him. It's everywhere.
The way the camera plays with us and the audience and him, but it was just, you know, this little boy covered in blood, and he is like just at the bottom below camera where you can see is like he's clearly sawing like something, but it's implying that it's like sick. Mom's forearm. But he is like, he is putting all his effort into actually sawing something, and like the hacksaw is covered in blood. He's covered in blood. But I knew I was in good hands at this moment because of the glowing blood and stuff. Because last week I was leery at the script description of the movie. But, you know, after that, I was like, okay, we're just, you know, we're in for a fun ride.
Yeah. Yeah. There's going to be, the gore is, it's more fun gore than realistic. Oh God, what am I watching for?
So immediately 10 minutes after he is done carving up his mom, the cops show up at the door.
Yeah. Some nosy neighbor like came by and was like, no one answering the door. So she got worried, got the cops. They come. The cops, they're searching the house, and then they bust into the little boy's room and they see mom in pieces. And then they open the closet door and that smart little boy, He's playing the scared little boy card.
Yeah.
You know, pretending to be hiding and, you know, shaking and stuff.
Amazing.
Know? Yeah. Yeah, little creep.
I know.
Just
own it. What a little piece of crap.
Just save us this 2-hour movie and just own it. Own what you did.
Yeah. And the neighbor's like, I know his aunt. He can go live with her. It's like, that's it. So we know the future of this kid. He gets away with it, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Cut to 1982, I guess, 40 years later, huh?
Yeah, 40 years later, Boston, Mass.
Yeah, some college campus. Yeah, they're not, everything about this movie. It's like just general college. Like, I don't think they ever say the name of the college it is or anything. Yeah, and so we're like introduced to the college life. We see kids on campus. One of the first scenes, this is another, like I tend to blink sometimes and I think I miss stuff, but maybe you can explain to me. There's a scene where a girl's, is she roller skating down the street? And there's two guys pulling a giant mirror out of a van or a window? Like,
it's like Wayne's World. And, it's like.
Yeah. And they cut right before she's like running into it, and they cut to like our faceless killer, like getting at his puzzle out, right? He's like getting his puzzle pieces out from the beginning of the movie and all his like mom's stuff. But what happened there, Dale?
So,
was that the first death?
Chuck.
I'm sorry. I'm jumping.
I will interpret. I'm livid. Okay.
Okay. Thank you.
Ooh, it's a video nasty, innit?
So,
oh my god, that's the best one so far.
So this girl was skateboarding, Chuck. Now I know you would recognize game, skateboarders,
yeah,
skate or die type thing. And she is
exactly,
she is skateboarding to class, and you know, she is running so close to this corner, and these dummy idiot plate glass mirror crew are the sloppiest unsafe workers there are, and they pull this big mirror out and exposes, you know, in front of the street, and she goes through it. And what that does is triggers in our killer's mind how mom busted up the mirror in the bedroom.
Oh, my God.
That's what kicks off this whole movie, Chuck.
Oh, my God.
You see, does it all make sense now in your head?
Yep. Yes. Thank you. I don't know how I missed all that.
So before, he was fully functioning member of society.
I think I was confused because the next murder happens. Yeah, and the next murder happens so quickly. Like, they immediately cut, I think, to the girl laying in the park studying, and she gets chainsawed up.
I mean, our killer, he was scrambling for a chainsaw.
Yeah.
As soon as he saw the accident happen.
Give me something.
Like, the trigger in his brain, immediate, he had to go find something to start hacking up.
No time to waste.
Immediately.
We got to do this now.
Yeah.
I got to get this feeling out of me. Please.
So, the killer sees this mirror smash into it, you know, and we don't see anything. I thought we were about to see this woman ripped to shreds by this mirror, but they don't show it, luckily.
Yeah.
Our killer immediately starts, he breaks out his old nudie puzzle, which he managed to hold on to after all this time, and he starts putting his puzzle together, which means in real life, he needs to start fashioning some body parts, because he needs a real life human puzzle to complement his nudie puzzle.
And this is, you know what, great aspect, great idea for this movie, is that he's going to collect body parts.
It really,
to make, as he puts his puzzle together, he's going to make himself a real life puzzle.
So super clever.
So gross.
Yeah. It really was.
Yeah.
And there is a girl, you know, in courtyard, you know, random courtyard on random university in Boston. And she is studying, reading, and, you know, somebody close by is with a chainsaw. And she's like, how long are you going to be using that thing? And the person's like, oh, I'm going to be done with it real soon. Don't worry.
Yeah.
And from this point on, I'm like, man, this person has no reservations whatsoever. He doesn't toy with them. He doesn't, with his victims, he doesn't toy with them. He doesn't chase them. He doesn't drug them. He just takes what he needs, literally.
Yeah.
And goes back to business, right? So he walks up to her, starts the chainsaw, cuts off her head. There's no chase. And
hightails it. Yeah.
And gets out of there.
And a pretty great shot of her. Or do they show her? No, maybe that's another one I'm thinking of. But do they show her headless?
Yeah, they do.
In the grass? They
and
do.
And she's still like, her chest cavity's like convulsing, kind of.
Yeah. But do they like bury her like real head in the ground or something? It looked awkward, whatever it was.
Because like her back was so bowed back. Like, they were trying something. good for them trying something.
It's great. It was great. And I thought they immediately gave up the ghost. I thought for sure that guy with the chainsaw was like, oh, well, I guess that's her killer. There he is. But that's not true. That's not even the first groundskeeper we encounter in this movie.
Yeah, right? So not even the first groundskeeper, not even the first suspect groundskeeper. Mm-mm. You know what I mean? Not the main suspect groundskeeper.
No, we'll never see that first groundskeeper again.
Never, but he has a speaking role. In the up until the mid 70s, Spain had like a fascist king in place. So there was no porn, there was no smoking, there was no drugs. You know, you could get a life sentence for like marijuana possession and stuff like that. So America was always like this hedonism, you know, for Spaniards. And So they really try to nail this vibe of like college life in the first couple minutes of being on college campus here. And that's proven by this conversation going on amongst these young students. And, you know, one is talking about owning a waterbed. They just got a waterbed. And they're like, have you ever screwed on a waterbed? And the girl is like, I wrote down the line here. The most beautiful thing in the world is fucking on a waterbed and smoking pot. Like,
these kids, I hate these kids, I have to say. Didn't like them.
I mean,
didn't
they're just like their chodes. Vibe.
Oh, they were gross. And, you know, and then they, what I find out later, they start making fun of their gay teacher, their professor. Right?
Yeah.
And I didn't even know that was like happening. And like later when they reveal he's gay, I was like, oh.
Yeah, I didn't know it was happening either. I thought that she was openly just trying to flirt with him because he was down. You know what I mean? He was down to get it. But yeah, no, after we find out that professor's gay, it's like, oh man, you jerks. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's this bosomy girl. She walks up to her professor and is like, my friends told me my pectorals are weird. Are my pectorals weird? And he's like, no, they're fine.
Yeah.
She's like, but where are they? Show me.
Oh, Professor Brown. Excuse me, sir. Can I ask you something? What are the pectorals? My friends all laugh at me. They say mine are funny.
I assure you, you have nothing to worry about.
Thank you, sir. But where are they?
Here. Right here.
But that sort of establishes this our professor as a possible suspect as well, because he's a little weird. He's a professor of cadavers. You know, he talks about cadavers a lot.
I
guess
he's got a human skull on his desk,
right?
That one of his students brought him,
right?
As a gift.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, and then at this point we meet the dean and the our police detectives, played by Christopher George, is like the main detective. Who this guy? I looked up his age. He was only like I think 52 when he made this, but I was convinced for some reason that he was like 80. Like well worn, and maybe I did read he died like the year after this came out, so I wouldn't be surprised if maybe he was sick actually.
Chuck, he's what we have in the business calls city miles. He's got some city miles on him.
City miles, yeah. But I'll tell you what, do you know who he his wife was during the making of this movie?
His wife was tennis professional turned cop Linda Day George.
Yeah. From the Mission Impossible TV show.
Yeah. And so for a long time, I think they were a package deal. Like they've been in 10, at least like 10 movies together. Yeah.
His voice, I clipped it so we can put it in here. Just an example, just a random example. His voice. I liked it, but it unsettled me. I didn't like it.
Miss, there are rumors like that at the university every couple of months.
Maybe so, but there's always a chance they could be true. There's talk that a girl has been killed.
Student body's imagination knows no bounds. Look, please excuse me, miss. I'm busy.
Because I felt like I could smell his breath through his voice. And he always had that like cigar in his mouth. And he looked like an old man and maybe had a case of halitosis. So I kept getting this like... this like smell-o-vision vibe anytime he opened his mouth. Cause it's his voice is so deep and his voice sounded like it has city miles on it. Can I just talk about the male student body of this college? They're all nerds. There is not one manly dude and all the women are beautiful, all the girls, but the male population they have to work with is embarrassing.
And they are, I mean, the one main guy, Kendall, he might as well be Stan Gable of the Alpha Betas. He is
he's like our main teen. Like he's supposed to be like the manly college kid, but he is a total dweebsville.
Dweeb, yeah. It's unbelievable. But he couldn't swing a dead cat without hitting some woman that clearly wants him.
Yeah. Yes, Kendall. Yeah.
Exactly. My favorite character of the movie was his friend. The total nerdy guy who had some of the best one-liners in the entire movie.
So great. They could have cut him out of the movie. He had no reason to be there, but he had great lines.
He brought it.
And it was weird. It definitely had a sense of like I feel like this is maybe my feeling with movies like this where all the actors are like from different cultures, so like they're maybe not delivering the English lines correctly, but it feels like they were like throwing jokes in, like all right, his mouth is moving this long, we can throw in another joke here. You're right. But it just like when you watch it, it's super awkward. It doesn't make sense. Like his face isn't going along with what he's saying.
Yeah, and it's, he's like his mouth is barely opening, but he's clearly saying a whole sentence.
It's like he brings Kendall a note, right, from a girl or something, and he's like, oh, no, don't tell me I'm the bearer of bad news.
What's going on?
Don't tell me I'm the bearer of bad news. I could kill myself.
No, it's all right.
Good. I'm too young to die.
That guy. He should have been the star.
Yeah, he should have been. And during that time, one of the ladies throwing themselves at Kendall is this blonde, who's, spoilers, will be our next victim. He passes Kendall a note and says, basically, I'm going to go swimming. Yeah. You look into,
you down?
She says, do you want to do it underwater? Or something like that. Like,
oh, that's right.
Does Kendall not start blushing immediately?
I just started blushing when you were looking into my eyes through the Zoom call. I'll tell you what. And then we see this lady swimming in the pool.
And then, no, Chuck, you can't just skip to it just like that.
Oh, I'm sorry.
We get to this one of the scenes where this betrays, like, this is probably the reason college campuses got, like, emergency help them in trouble towers on every city block and in every building. Every room in this campus is dimmer than the next room. She goes to this pool. She goes to this pool that's right on the, shares a door with the library, and the pool, there's like 3 feet of deck space from this outside of the pool to the pool, and there's zero lights on, and then she starts skinny dipping. Is this a public pool that anybody on campus can use? How big is this? Is this campus the size of, the campus from the movie The Prowler that was supposed to be a college campus too? Like, this, anybody can walk in right now, lady. Our killer comes on in.
Yeah.
Lets himself in.
Black hat, black trench coat, black rubber gloves, gets himself a pool skimmer. Now this, I found a little hard to believe. He gets that pool skimmer and he hooks our girl over the head and pulls her in. But she, as soon as this like lightweight net goes on her, she's like,
is taxed. I mean, she is fatigued. So how convenient for her that she can't even like move or catch her breath because he's still got to start the chainsaw, which he does. He has the time. Mm-hmm. Because of her, her lack of physical fitness.
But yeah, he gets that chainsaw. What are we up to? He got a head.
So we're at...
Is this the torso?
We're at the torso, yeah.
Ugh.
Right. Ugh. So this is like, essentially it's the messiest one because he doesn't want the arms.
Yeah.
The arms are for somebody else. So he just needs the torso, main torso. So he takes only the torso and leaves everything else.
Ugh. It's the biggest chunk of meat. I mean, that's like half the battle there if you're collecting body parts to make a whole body.
Well, it somehow everybody makes their way into the pool house at this point.
Yeah.
Kendall makes their way. The police are there. Our second gardener suspect walks into the pool house because he finds his chainsaw there.
The groundskeeper.
Groundskeeper.
Interesting fact. I was going to jokingly call this guy Bluto throughout the whole podcast.
Right.
Until I looked up his filmography, and I was like, holy shit, he really did play Bluto in Robert Altman's Popeye.
Crazy.
Couldn't believe it. And man, this guy, what's his name? Paul Smith. He's got this look, this one look that he used for every single scene in this movie. It's a look of looking off to the side at whoever he's talking to or interacting with.
Yeah, his face is just like his face is straight ahead.
Yeah.
But his eyes are somewhere else.
Yeah, completely wrenched to one side or the other. And he's like big and hairy. He looks like a lumberjack.
Mm-hmm.
Has a gruff voice.
He was also in David Lynch's Dune. Shout out to our boys over at 70mm.
No kidding. Wow. Paul L. Smith. It makes me think of, did you ever see Popeye? He sings this song, Bluto, Paul Smith, this song that, like, basically the only thing I remember from the movie is the song. He's like,
I mean, you know what I mean. You know what I say. You know what I mean. Mean. You know what I mean. I'm meaner than.
That's it.
I mean what I say. I'm so mean, I had a dream of beating myself up.
That's a weird movie. People should watch it.
Broke my nose, yeah. I broke it's my hand, I wrestled myself to the ground. And then
but yeah, so Bluto we got here.
So Kendall, our college boy, it becomes, at this point, like super main character. He becomes everything that we need in this movie. He becomes deputized near the end of the movie. He becomes, you know, the watchful eyes. He is supposed to keep an eye on the undercover cop that, you know, installs themselves as tennis coach. There's a lot going on with this kid. A lot going on.
Yeah.
And he is called to the station to help kind of establish a psychological profile of our killer because, you know, this guy is, at least right now, connected to the victim in some way. He's not necessarily a suspect.
I don't know why. Like, I really don't know why, but he does.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's weird. They like deputize. He basically becomes one of the crew because the police force is, you know, they're out of resources, I guess. So much so they're having secretaries go undercover as police instructor, as tennis instructors. Yeah.
Boston PD. Boston PD. Consisting of two Boston, detectives and a secretary who used to be a tennis star. And
God, I love that.
To not help matters,
mm-hmm.
The first college student that meets our future undercover cop recognizes her as tennis champ.
Fucking Kendall lays eyes on her and goes, oh, Mary Riggs.
Right.
I couldn't believe it. I was so angry.
He's like, what are you doing here? What, you know, you're a tennis champ. She's like, well, you know, this is my life now. Mm-hmm. And yeah, like, what? Now you're going to install this person undercover as a tennis coach?
Yeah.
And then.
Super weird.
And then back to the college campus. There's an exhibition match between Mary Riggs, tennis star, and a tennis student. Like, they don't even slide her in. They're just like, oh, this is Mary Riggs. Starting tomorrow, she's an undercover cop on campus. Today, Mary Riggs, national champion.
Yeah. It was weird. Like, she's supposed to be the tennis instructor for the college students, but, like, I think she made, like, her first class was, I'm going to school this kid. And just have a match with the whole faculty watching.
Yeah, there's 57 people watching this, all knowing that she's... How about tell nobody she's an undercover cop?
What about the dancer death?
So they take the dancer's arms, not the dancer's legs.
No. Super weird.
So this is the first hint when our killer corners the dance student in the ramshackle, shittiest elevator you've ever seen.
Yeah.
She says, oh, sir, it's you. Oh, now, college student recognizes this person,
mm-hmm.
starting to shape up, calling him sir. Do we call the groundskeeper sir? You know, do we call somebody in a position of authority, sir?
Perhaps.
Starts to narrow it down for us here. Mm-hmm. And like with the other victims, I mean, he just straight, like from the hip, chainsaws this girl's arms off. in this elevator pretty epically.
Does anyone notice that he's carrying around a chainsaw? Maybe it's under his trench coat.
Yeah, it was like behind his back in this one.
Yeah. Maybe he's got some sort of like chain hanging from his belt that's like the chainsaw is like hanging from, so it's between his legs.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
So he takes his trophies, leaves her flopped in the elevator. He doesn't care.
And they do a great job. Every time he gets another body part, they cut to him back in wherever his hovel is, putting the next pieces of the puzzle together.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And he's like,
I love that.
I like some of the shots because he's like feverishly putting the puzzle together.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's one where it's like, it's hilarious because it's like, I think he was actually just having trouble because he was wearing this big rubber gloves and he couldn't get the piece to fit.
Yeah, so it's like it's like 3 seconds real time of him trying to get the same piece in. They just let the camera roll, baby. Just let it roll. Yeah, so then there's the killing of the tennis student.
And that's after they kill the reporter, right?
The killer, he kills the reporter on this, again, empty room. It's not a dorm room. There's no dressers. There's no TVs. There's no posters.
It looks like a storage closet.
With a full waterbed.
Yeah.
Why?
And, I don't know. And he kills her with a knife with this one. That's the other weird thing is this one doesn't use a chainsaw. This is a knife killing. And this actually has that gross shot, right? Where the knife.
Oh, yeah.
It's kind of funny because the one angle, it looks like, I think you can see the knife blade bend, like it's made of rubber.
Yeah.
But then they cut and you see the blade coming out of her mouth.
Right. From the back. So it's from the back to the front.
Yeah. Yeah. Pretty gross.
Yeah, it was. It was.
in a bloody ruptured waterbed.
Well, and then, okay, before we get too deep into this, Chuck.
Sure. Yeah.
Soon after this, we got two very important scenes back to back with each other. First, the Porky's like scene where Kendall is with a woman and he bitches her out because she can't like not squeal. Because he's pleasing her too much. like he bitches her out and then she's like, please Kendall, I can be more quiet for you, and then he's like, and then she's like, oh Kendall, like she ramps up again, and that's when we Kendall. See when we see Kendall's Kendall, like we see him full on in the in you know the darkened window light. We see his fronts piece. And he is looking across the street to see Mary Riggs, undercover cop tennis player, walking home by herself at night.
Oh, that Mary Riggs.
Yeah.
He had it bad for Mary Riggs, by the way.
He was. I
mean, we should say this.
Like, good on Mary Riggs, right? Because the only reason why they weren't together in this movie is because she refused to do a sex scene in the movie. Like,
no kidding.
It was in the script that she was going to bed him as well.
I love Mary Riggs.
Yes.
Linda, what is it? Linda Day?
Love
Linda Day. She's great.
So.
She owns her body.
Yes. She's walking home or walking somewhere. I don't know where she's walking. Mm-hmm. And another absurd scene of the movie. She
racially insensitive,
super racially insensitive, super
completely
of the time. She is attacked by an Asian man, attacked like kung
wearing
fu
like
in a tracksuit.
Yeah, tracksuit. Yeah.
One of the Bruce Lee knockoff. This one is Bruce Lee. You may have seen, like, in the 80s, there was, like, tons of Bruce Lee knockoffs, but their name was, like, Bruce Lee Light, like,
oh my
super
God.
Light.
I had no idea.
Yeah. So this is one of them, Bruce Lee, L-E.
Ugh. It looks like he's attacking her. Like, he's, like, but then Kendall pops up around the corner. Or no. He comes driving down in his motorcycle, right?
Yeah.
Down the alleyway?
Yeah. And she ends up kicking Bruce Lee in the balls.
Oh, yeah. She kicked him in the balls. So he goes down. And then Kendall comes up the alleyway on his motorcycle. And she's like, geez, that sounds like a chainsaw.
Right. Geez, sounds like a chainsaw. By the way, I almost just got killed Like, she didn't leave that. She left that part out. And Kendall's like, that's just my martial arts professor. What?
Yeah. Yeah. And they like high five and smile at each other or something.
Yeah.
And he just like runs off. He's out on a jog.
What?
It doesn't make any sense.
It makes zero sense. And it's totally racially insensitive. It is crazy.
I don't know what they were thinking with this scene. Other than that, they thought it would be cool to have a fake Bruce Lee in the movie. I don't know.
Right. And I think that's what it was, is he was represented by an agent, or the director knew him and he promised him a role. But I mean, it was not necessary at all.
Yeah. And it's like they did the role, they like, it didn't even make sense for her to attack him. Like, they didn't even take time to like make it fit like logically.
I know.
It's like, okay, attack her for no reason and then continue on your jog.
Yeah. I mean, if she's going to be attacked, I'll have the killer attack her, something. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. Super weird.
Video nasty.
It's all.
Thank you, Dirk Feelgood. Appreciate that.
Yeah. Dirk doesn't approve either.
This is a certified video nasty. This is a gory movie.
What I liked was it was like quick cuts of gore, just enough that you could fully understand what this chainsaw was doing to this body, but it wasn't dwelling.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
The killer, one thing I wanted to bring up is his moaning. Like, every time they would do point of view shots from the killer's point of view, and they would give him this moaning that was really...
Oh yeah, he was.
I didn't like it. It was disturbing. I did not like it. So the cops are getting close, right?
Cops are.
He's got some sort of like. He's got his partner back at the station going through files, mountains of files, and he like sends. He deputizes Kendall to go help his
so
partner,
stupid.
Who's been up for what, like 72 hours or something. He says,
but,
to help sort through files, because they have some. What do they have? Some lead? They're like cross referencing something. I don't know.
Right. I mean,
do they even explain?
They don't explain it. You know, but. Our main detective is willing to blow the budget on this one case, but it's still just the guy, you know, it's like the guy, he reminds me of the guy who was like the head of the A-team with his white hair.
Yeah, he's got the white
hair. He is just in the office cross-referencing folders and files, and he's been doing it for 23 hours a day. What are you?
And his...
Is this your job? Is this your like, pay grade? Yeah. Don't you have people to do this? Because you're deputizing Kendall. To help you.
And when he tells our main detective, hey, I've been up for like 3 days looking through these files, his boss or his partner says to him, take some uppers or something.
Yeah. God, take uppers. Let's get this case done.
We gotta catch this guy.
Luckily,
take some uppers.
Luckily, once Kendall arrives at the station and he gets these file folders, go through. They use the police budget on some sweet, sweet sponsorship from Wendy's.
Oh my God. I wanted to talk about that.
Right?
So, did they ship some Wendy's cups and burgers over from America to Spain?
I mean,
just to have them in the shot.
Shoot.
Was
dude.
So weird. What was going on?
I was like, man, I want some Wendy's now more than ever. That old Wendy's logo.
Oh, no.
That crappy, like, so wax wholesome. Paper cup.
Oh, I love it.
God.
That's a thing you do when you're a little kid with like a cup from a fast food place. Sometimes you end up holding onto that cup all day and the wax starts coming off and you've like mangled it so much.
Yeah.
It's all wrinkly.
Yeah. Yeah. You remember you could like, wax you could like scrape the side of it with your fingernail and the wax would like,
oh yeah,
curl up,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
And the soda would like eat through the bottom of it. Oh
yeah.
Man.
Oh yeah. That's right. So acidic.
It's a good time.
Oh man, yeah, super weird Wendy's cameo in this movie.
Yeah, and Kendall, like, luckily Kendall's in there because he finds.
How mad would you be? They send the fucking nerd boy to come help you, and he nasty. Finds the information.
Like, what? He's gonna get all the glory now, and they're like, you know what? That's got to be it.
That's it. We found him.
And then they know.
Case closed.
And then they know it's the dean that's been doing it.
It's the dean, our creepy dean, who was high on my list. Yeah. So what does he do? He, our dean, but by this point, he's got Maria in his clutches somehow. He like, does he invite her over to his like quarters? Do deans live like?
Are deans like priests or nuns?
Yeah.
Mary wants to complain to the dean about how it could possibly be somebody else. And the dean is like spiking her instant coffee with, you know, nightshade or something to paralyze her.
But our police detectives are en route. They know who it is, and they realize Maria's there. So they're high-tailing it over there. And we get a great shot of the dean with his, I think he just has his knife. He doesn't have his chainsaw on him, I guess. And he's hovering over, I didn't dream this, right? He's like drooling over Maria's feet.
Oh, yeah. He's like, yeah, he picks him up. Like he's,
yeah.
So at this point, we don't know that he needs feet, but yeah. He decides on the fly now that she's here.
Yeah, as well.
He like puts plastic drop cloth under her feet.
Sick.
And he's like rubbing his cheek on her feet and he's like stunning them up close. Yeah. Cops get there and he hides behind the curtain. But she's paralyzed and can't say anything at this point. She's looking, she's leering over at the curtain.
She's pulling a groundskeeper Bluto and just staring at the curtain that is wildly moving. And it's obvious there's someone standing behind the curtain, but no one will look.
Yeah, nobody will look. Nobody will pay attention to what she has to say.
She's just a dumb drugged woman. Here.
Yeah, Deputy Warden Kendall is here to save the day now.
I love the detective's advice to tell Kendall to walk her around the room to help her snap out of it.
Yeah, walk her. Yeah, right.
Let's walk her. She's paralyzed somehow.
Right. Yeah, just drag her feet across the carpet until she starts using those muscles of her again. Kendall. Kendall, MD.
Kendall.
And so he's doing that. He's walking her around the room, which she starts immediately re-engaging with her body.
Mm-hmm.
And the dean jumps out from behind the curtain and is ready to, you know, fight for what's his.
Yeah. And he goes after Kendall. And I was like rooting. I was like, yes, get him. Get Kendall. but he pins Kendall. He's got the knife over him. It's very tense. The music swells. And then our old man detective pops in and, man, doesn't even think. He gets his gun out and shoots him right in the forehead. The dean is dead. They're like, you know, they're detectives. Kendall's, I guess, still deputized because he's helping them. He's still hanging out, talking, going through stuff. They find the puzzle. Like, oh, this is kind of weird. This weird nudie lady puzzle. How about that? And then I think is it the white haired detective? He accidentally triggers a false bookcase.
All right.
And it
the false bookcase and our puzzle, our human puzzle comes flipping around like Scooby-Doo style.
Yeah. It's a lady and she's like Frankenstein all. She's not alive, but she's got stitches You know, it looks like she's been put together. She flops.
It looked great.
Yeah, it was awesome. Yeah.
It was super effed up, but it looked like the effect was there.
Yeah.
And it worked.
It worked. But we're not done yet, Dale. We got one more zinger to go. A little something for the ladies, perhaps.
So our dead bodies are, you know, lined up on the floor, ready to be, you know, processed and taken away.
Mm-hmm.
And, our gravelly voiced detective jokes that maybe Kendall should join the police force. And you know, and everybody has a laugh and they're like, well, let's start leaving. Let's leave this mess for the you know, the medical examiner. And Kendall's getting ready to leave.
Forgets his jacket though.
Yep. He got to go back for his jacket, which is quite near the dead bodies.
Mm-hmm.
He leans over to get his jacket. Puzzle woman.
Yeah. Say it.
Puzzle woman's arm shoots up alive, very much alive, this arm. Mm-hmm. Grabs at Kendall's crotch with such ferocity.
Jeans.
That
I believe he's wearing jeans.
Jeans, denim.
Tough material, yeah.
and claws her way into his pants to leave razor-like bloody scratches.
Like as if there was like a blood-soaked sponge in his pants.
Uh-oh, video nasty.
Oh my God.
She just had to give a little squeeze.
And she just squeezes. Ugh. Like it's, and that's, I mean, that's how the movie ends, but she's like the squeezing doesn't end. It just keeps going deeper. It's so crazy.
Bloody Nora.
And I got my wish. Kendall got.
Kendall, right.
Crotch crunched right at the end there.
I mean.
But man, yeah, I mean, what a great ending, you know? That was worth, you know, watching the whole thing, was that last one.
Crazy. That I mean, the movie fades to black on the close-up shot of a bloodied denim crotch with a hand just ever squeezing.
I didn't love this movie, but it was okay. Like I'm trying to think like what my overall thoughts. I remembered I did start to watch this months ago. I put it on because when I pulled it up on Shudder, it was like, oh, do you want to resume? And I was like, oh, yeah, okay. Because I was, yeah. And I watched, I think the opening kill, the kid killing his mom, turned me off because like I only made it like a minute or two after that. I think maybe whatever mood I was in, I was like, I'm not into this right now.
Yeah, you're just like, let's just try this another time.
Yeah, yeah. But it was entertaining. It's tough to watch with like modern sensibilities, you know, as far, you know, like it's a pretty misogynist slasher as a lot of these are, but
it was good. It was a great, I agree. I was expecting worse. I can say that.
It's got a great poster. The Spanish poster is amazing. I don't know if you can see that. It's on Wikipedia. It's a middle of the road one for me. I didn't hate it. I didn't love it. But yeah, if you're into this stuff, it's worth watching.
So if you want to send us your email or your voice memos, batandspiderpod@gmail.com. Please just send your correspondence that way. We also have a phone number if you want to leave a voicemail, 315-544-0966. All right, Chuck, first up is an email from friend of the show, Yoli.
Yoli.
Hello, Chuck and Dale. I can confirm that the weird, creepy, carnivalesque music that plays at the start of the episode is also present on the DVD from 2004. This is regarding to our first episode of The Crypt Keeper's Coffin.
Cool.
So it would appear the musical score was not stripped or redone for digital. I enjoyed the mini podcast, love Tales from the Crypt, and was excited to see this is going to be a new thing. Yeah, thanks, Yoli. Chuck and I are super excited. Man, such a great idea. I can't wait to go through these episodes.
Yeah, they're so fun to watch. And if us talking about them gives you an excuse to sit down and watch them too with us, that would be great.
I know.
They're quick.
Yeah.
They're so quick, and they're just like little fun bolts of horror joy.
Yoli, what kind of back matter on those that DVD box set? Is there a lot of special features?
Oh, God, man. I know. Yeah, I feel like I should do that. I should get those guys. Tales from the Crypt. Thank you, Yoli.
Thanks for writing in, Yoli. That's amazing. Thank you for expressing that. And we're excited to keep going too. So thanks for listening. Next up is from a friend of the show, Hobo Salary on Instagram. Being a fan of Martin, much like Chuck is, I highly recommend a movie called Transfiguration. It might still be on Shudder, thematically similar to Martin, but it's a newer movie with a predominantly black cast, which is a nice change of pace, seeing as vampire movies tend to be lily white. P.S., which of you is the bat and which is the spider? Hobo Salary. That is, I think, more bat and spider, just, if I may, just exists as an idea. You know?
Yeah. We're more the the droppings on the floor that the bat and spider exists.
Right. In, I mean, we're lucky enough to share the same
observers,
the same world,
yeah,
the same space. But really, bat and spider, you know, they're their own thing. They're their own legend.
Yeah. And your recommendation, The Transfiguration, I have actually seen that. I watched that originally a few months ago when I was looking for off the beaten path vampire movies. And unfortunately, I didn't love that one. I did. There's a lot to appreciate about it. I think it was a cool idea, but it felt like it didn't. I don't know. It felt like it needed to go back in the oven a little bit. But it is, I think it is worth checking out. Because it does have really interesting ideas, and it's a definitely a vampire movie that I haven't seen done quite the same. It's like two young, like, I think they're like maybe 13 or 14 year old, like two young kids in like Brooklyn or Queens or something in like modern day. And the one kid thinks he's a vampire and they kind of like befriend each other, and it's a cool setup.
Okay. Well, thanks for the email, Hobo Salary. We appreciate your writing in. And that's it for this week, Chuck. No voicemails this week, so just those emails. And now is the point in time of the show where we pick the next movie.
Oh boy! Sometimes this is my favorite part of the show. I don't know why. I think because it like hope springs eternal.
Yeah, it's always a new chance for.
It's just always it's always exciting. Yeah. So it's my turn this week. I'm looking at the list, and you know what? I'm going to make a swerve and pick a movie that I've seen before.
Okay.
I don't think you've seen it, but mostly because I decided that I didn't want to go 10 episodes without us doing a Hammer movie.
Oh yeah. Whoa.
Well, I'm far from a Hammer aficionado. I did sit down probably like 4 years ago and watch a bunch of the big ones, and I had a absolute blast, and I totally understand the love for Hammer horror. And one of my favorites that I watched was The Curse of Frankenstein, starring Christopher Lee and Peter Cushing.
Oh man, I am excited. I've seen maybe one or two Hammer movies, and this is not one of them. So I am immensely excited to watch this. I can't wait.
Yeah. Yeah.
So next time on the show, The Curse of Frankenstein, and don't forget, we also have our Tales from the Crypt minisodes coming out if you want to watch along with those, and we are on social media in Bat and Spider on Instagram.
Yeah, you can find me at Charles Forsman on Instagram. I've got a Twitter, but I never look at it, so don't expect me to reply.
Yeah, I'm Dale_A on Instagram as well. I mostly use that nowadays too, which, I don't need to pontificate on my Instagram usage. So anyway, what a great episode, Chuck.
Yeah, had a blast, as always.
As always, until next time, Chuck, this has been Bat and Spider.
Our theme song was created by Toby Forsman of Whipsong Music. Find out more at whipsongmusic.com.